Hi, welcome to this week's episode of Energy in Action. I'm your host, Stephanie. Here on Energy in Action, we talk all things Mito. We hope to be informational as well as entertaining. And today's episode is definitely on the entertaining side. We are speaking with Sarah from Candu Canines, a service dog organization located in Minnesota. Sarah is here to educate us on the value of having a service dog for those of us who might have mobility issues. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for joining us today on our podcast, Energy in Action. Sarah's from Candu Canines, which is located in a suburb of Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's in New Hope. I'm lucky enough to live very close to Candu Canines and have seen various dogs in action from them, either in parades or in the community as puppies, as adults. And so I am super excited for Sarah to talk to us about this organization and how having a service animal can be beneficial to patients with mitochondrial disease. So Sarah, why don't you go ahead and give us some historical information?
Hi, absolutely. Thank you, Stephanie. We actually just celebrated 30 years to have an organization as amazing as Candu Canines. Our founder, Al Peters, just retired officially in December of 2020, but he was the one that started it all with shelter dogs, actually. So he was taking rescues that had a good temperament and a little work ethic, and he was training them to work with people primarily and initially with hearing disabilities, then mobility, and then we branched into diabetes and autism and seizure assist dogs.
Wow. So I just want to, So he started out just using shelter dogs and just retrained them to be hearing dogs at any age?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
He found some amazing younger dogs that were just excited about life and about working. And they were able to help a lot of people and pave the path for our dogs now.
Okay. Wow. That I had no idea that that was how it all started. So do you know how many dogs you've had in your program?
I know this year we will place our 800th team. We're thinking sometime in the summer of 2021, we will hit 800 officially certified teams with Candu Canines.
Wow. That is amazing. And what does a team mean? Like, explain what that means.
Absolutely. So a team is made up of our client and their assistance dog partner. So for these two to become an official certified Candu Canines team is they start working together. They train under the guidance of a client services coordinator, which is what I do. These dogs are placed at about 2 years old. They've been raised as assistance dogs now. They've been trained. They go in for their college time and learn advanced skills to be matched with the right person. And through our matching process between client services and our program trainers, we start that team training process. So the clients and the dogs work together for a matter of weeks to months. And then when we feel like the dog is reliably and consistently performing those skills it was trained to do to help the person with a disability, then we film those skills because of our ADI requirements, and we show that they are the team we expected and hoped them to be. So that's when they're certified and they graduate.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing. So what type of dog do you look for? Like you said, they're raised up, they come into the program. I have personally seen little golden labs wearing the little tiny red Candu Canine in training coats or capes, and it's so hard not to touch them. So what type of dog are you guys looking for to train up into the program?
Absolutely. We have primarily Labrador Retrievers, or like you said, those golden Labrador mixes. We're actually part of a breeding cooperative. So it's a lot of research and extensive genetic testing and behavioral assessments. And we work with other assistance dog international accredited organizations that we're able to help each other breed service dog lines. So like I said, mostly labs and goldens because of their temperament, their health, and just that we find great success with them.
they're just their willingness to please, I think, is the key factor. I'm a golden retriever owner and I've never met one. Well, I shouldn't say that, but they're very eager to please and make you happy. So I can see how those would be your go-to lines. So
yes, I have a golden asleep on my foot right now. I have my 9-year-old golden is napping attached to me as we speak.
They do love a good person pillow, don't they?
Yes. I guess my foot is it today.
So what are some of the reasons that clients come to you and say, I would really like to see if my life can be better with a service animal?
That's the initial response that we look for is, I want my life to be better. And I think a dog can help me do that. You know, a lot of people come and say, oh, my doctor thought this would be a good idea, or my daughter or my spouse or my parents think this would be a good thing for me. But we really want to hear from the clients themselves that they believe this is a good fit for their life. They have, you know, a good grasp on their medical conditions, and they've been maybe working through a few trials and equipment that can help them, but the dogs can enhance their quality of life. And we kind of look for that space to bring their healthcare from good to better.
Okay.
We train for 5 different career paths, as we call them. So we work with mobility assist dogs, hearing assist dogs, type 1 diabetes assist dogs, seizure assist dogs, and autism assist dogs. And we also place for combinations thereof. You know, people with some equilibrium issues may need hearing and mobility help, or seizure response and mobility help. So, you know, with those special cases, we can definitely combine some of those paths to help the person the best. Is there a specific career path that you're asking about with diagnoses?
Well, a lot of our patients have everything that you talked about, but I would think like mobility and seizure would definitely be in our grouping. We have a lot of patients mitochondrial disease is an energy deficiency disease. So many of our patients use mobility devices to ambulate. And so I'm wondering, like, if you could tell me a story of like how a dog would help somebody with a mobility issue.
Sure. I was looking at your wonderful program and saw that it was a lot of mobility assist potential. And I was talking with one of my coworkers. We typically had people applying with multiple sclerosis or Parkinson's disease, or maybe a spinal cord injury, or muscular dystrophy. But now it's been such a mix of diagnoses. We're seeing more Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of people coming in with a mobility condition that they don't even have a name for. They're still testing and looking for answers. But we've noticed a lot more chronic fatigue syndrome being diagnosed, a lot of medical PTSD being diagnosed. So while we place dogs with a person that has a mobility disorder or syndrome or condition, applicants that they've gone to all the testing, they've done EEGs, and they've had doctors not believe that they had seizures because it doesn't show up. Oh. But for psychosomatic or non-epileptic seizures, if a person is experiencing something, an episode where a dog can lay across them and provide recovery support or get additional human help or get a medicine that can help a person recover faster, maybe even a water bottle so they can, you know, recover sooner and with less pain or discomfort. That's really what we look for, is what skills a dog can provide to mitigate a disability over what the actual label of the disorder is.
Wow, I love that, to mitigate that. Wow, and when you just said that, how simple. I mean, get a water bottle, get help, you know, go get another human, bring a medication. And you are able to train these dogs to do those sorts of activities and do them successfully and I guess on command, right? Or on, notification, like they sense this and know, oh, I need to jump in and participate here?
Yes, we absolutely train them so that all their skills are on a cue. They start some involuntary spasms that a dog is able to see, and that they'll start licking their hands or they'll lay across their lap. So they are technically on a cue, but it's not like they would say sit and have the dog's behind hit the ground. It's they move in a certain way or they act in a certain way, and a dog is also able to respond to those body cues.
Okay. So what body cues would a dog look for in a type 1 diabetic?
They actually pick up on scent cues. So we use scent discrimination for type 1 diabetes training, which is my personal love in life. So we gather saliva and breath samples from a type 1 diabetic who's experiencing a low blood sugar or hypoglycemia. We gather those on sterile gauze pads, and we actually teach the dog that when they smell whatever chemical is present on this gauze pad, that they can respond with a nose nudge or a paw touch alert.
Okay.
And that's how they notify the person that their blood sugar is low. So we make it a game that the faster you smell this and the faster you respond, the bigger puppy party that you get.
Wow. It's so, okay, I'm just, that is absolutely wonderful, because those are cues the person who has the disease might not necessarily know. Just working with different people, many people don't realize when their blood sugar is very low. To another person, they're definitely acting abnormally, but they might not realize that. So that is amazing that you can teach the dog on scent to react to that. So you were saying that when they have the hypoglycemic event, even though that they've been a patient or had this disease a good portion of their life, even having all the tools around them, still the dog can be a beneficial addition to their medical treatment, correct?
They can. So these monitors and meters can sense lows, but the dogs are able to detect the chemical changes, whatever that may be, even before all the sensors can tell.
Wow. That is amazing. So is that the dog, you know, you said this is like your favorite type of training to do. Is that one that is like the primary training that you do at Can-Do Canines, or is it a pretty good mix of what you're training animals for?
It's a very big mix of what we train animals for. I personally have type 1 diabetes. I make 20 years in May. And that's just where I got into training dogs and working with the people that use them. A lot of our dogs are mobility assist dogs. And then the rest are kind of a mix. So we have more and more people seeking help with autism, mm-hmm. and seizure assist. And even diabetes, we've had more applicants, but you know, for the past 30 years, it's been primarily hearing and then mobility assist dogs.
So with your clients who have autism, what sort of ways can a dog help with someone with autism?
For autism assist dogs, they are taught to apply light pressure therapy. So they can lay across the child's lap as they're starting to spiral. They provide a grounding feeling for kids that have some sensory issues or are starting to have a meltdown. The parents are actually the primary handlers for the dog in most, if not all cases. And they're able to cue the dog to lay across the child's lap or to go to the child and give a head rest so that the child's able to refocus. They can get that sense of grounded security again. So that's one of the tasks that the dogs perform. They're also tethered to the autism client, as the parent or guardian or adult will hold the leash, so that if the, I say child, but we have some older autism clients that are successors, but the autism client, if they decide to bolt or wander or run away, you know, they get overstimulated and they just have to get out, they're holding on to a handle as well as wearing a belt attached to the dog. And generally they choose to stay. They're physically tethered, but they really understand that their dog is there to help them. And if they do choose to bolt anyway, the dog is taught to sit or to stay still. And that way they prevent the child from, you know, running into danger.
That is amazing. So they become an anchor is what you're saying.
Exactly. That's exactly.
Oh, I love that. Wow. I think every mother of a toddler would like a dog as an anchor. That's a really good idea. So tell me one of your favorite client success stories, like the type of dog, how everybody came together. And then I have to ask, is it hard to be a puppy raiser and know that you have to send it on its way to its next stage in life? Because I would love to be a puppy raiser, but I know I would probably end up kidnapping it. So.
Oh, I understand. And you are not alone. So first, the highlights or favorite teams. In general, and I've been doing this for 6 years at Can Do Canines, but I really appreciate the clients that they do. They've tried all the equipment. They've seen all the doctors. And they get so discouraged by people turning them away. I heard on some of your other podcasts, some of these diagnosis journeys are just all that a person can handle. Mm-hmm. And it's mentally draining and exhausting to be told something isn't real or you're fine because the tests are fine and you know something's wrong. So I really enjoy working with people that don't have a typical situation or don't have something that other people have heard of, but they know that a dog is able to help them. And they have an awareness of the responsibility it takes to have an assistance dog as well. So I've worked with a lot of type 1 diabetics that, you know, they've tried all the equipment or even they lost the ability to wear the equipment. They react to the adhesive or the sensors don't work anymore for them. You know, that no one tool is perfect.
Right.
But a dog can help so many different situations as long as it's the right fit. You know, as long as the person has the place that's the right support system for the dog, and then the dog is able to then support the person.
That is a good way to put it. So from start to finish, so you work with your breeder, your puppies are born, they get their eyes open. At what point do they start learning to be helpers? Like, is it go time right at 10 weeks or like how old are they when you start kind of culling the herd on this one looks pretty good, this one's going to be the clown of the class, you know, how that all works.
I do. And it's amazing to see a litter might have one personality trait across the board, but they're all just so individual personalities. Just, I mean, they look like little potatoes. They're so precious, but they do have personalities. Honestly,
I have been on your website. I have looked at your little puppy cam thing a few times and have been like, oh, that one over there is naughty. You can just tell when you look at them.
There'll be one that is determined to climb out of the whelping box no matter how many times it gets put back.
Yep.
So we say, well, that's tenacious and confident, so you know that might be a busy little helper. Honestly, from day one, we have wonderful whelping homes that have enrichment setups, so they're exposed to things that move and things that make noise in a safe environment. We have little puppy wraps, so they get used to wearing some capes and being comfortable. Not all dogs are okay with wearing extra equipment, but we try and help them work through if anyone has sensitivity. And it truly is from day one, we have a vision of all these little puppies becoming assistance dogs.
And what happens to that one little guy who just can't do it? Does he just go off to be in a home where he's just going to be loved anyways and just know that he didn't make it, or do they all make it?
Oh no, we absolutely take into consideration a lot of factors. So we look at everything from allergies to eye health to structural soundness. We get a lot of health clearances done. Some puppies don't pass all those health clearances, so they go to good homes that can accommodate their needs. And then behavioral traits are the biggest piece, that a dog has to be happy and willing and engaged and tolerate so much. You know, we look for dogs that function as a human more than a dog. And that's so much to ask from them.
Right.
So if they are career changed, we have a process that we find the right home that, you know, if they don't like kids or they don't like other dogs or they just don't like being in public every day, that's okay. That is okay. And we would never place that burden on a dog. So we make sure that they have the right kind of family to raise them and support them regardless of what their future looks like, if it's not an assistance dog.
So I like how you call that a career change. What happens if their primary human can no longer have a dog, say they pass away, or that their care needs just become at a different level where a dog just isn't going to be able to provide what they need? What happens then? Does he just stay?
About a dog that's already placed?
Yeah. So like you've been with your dog for 5 or 6 years and then the person has some life changes and that dog just doesn't meet the needs of that person anymore. Does he go to another family or does he just kind of get to go live out his life as a happy, smart dog somewhere else? Or
retirement can take a lot of different paths. It's kind of as diverse as a human's, you know, you can hang out at home and be happy there, or you can travel the world and go to a different place. So our retirement plans will vary depending on the person's needs, or if they do pass away, their support system's needs. If they're unable to take care of a dog at that time, we will rehome them. We will still find a family that can raise an older retired assistance dog, but we do tell people from day one, retirement can happen at any time. You know, life is full of unexpected surprises for better and worse. So we try and have a plan for people and their dogs. Should something happen to either of them, how can we best move forward and take care of everyone?
So how does the dog know he's no longer a service dog? So he goes into retirement as a retired service dog. Does he know he doesn't have to pick up socks or queue up anymore? Or like, how do you teach him to not do those things? Or don't you?
It depends. If there's another dog in the house, you know, if it's the right situation for a person to have their successor dog and their retired service dog, you know, they'll make time for the retired dog, but they'll primarily be asking for things from the working new assistant successor dog. And if they just go to a home, they might every once in a while want to pick up a pen, but honestly, they generally retire because, you know, if their health is good and their energy just isn't interested in helping nonstop, you know, they're actually honestly happier to just hang out on the couch and watch the people pick up the pen for themselves.
Actually, yes. Yes, I can attest to that. I have a golden who was always like, you are very well at doing everything for yourself, was his attitude. So you guys have an incredible fundraiser coming up, which is so important because in our community, we know that support animals can be expensive to get acclimated and into somebody's life. Are you able to share like what the general cost is for somebody to obtain an animal through Can-Do Canines and how they go about those funding streams?
Absolutely. So we are in a very unique and fortunate situation where the organization does not charge our clients any price tag on the dog. So we place our assistance dogs at no cost. But with that, we do have an application fee, and we do want to remind people that are applying for a dog, even though there's no price tag on their value, which is upwards of $25,000 for an assistance dog to be, to have gone through training, to have been raised as a healthy, capable pup. We do remind them that they need a higher quality of life.
So tell me about this fabulous fundraising event that you have coming up. It's called the Fetching Ball. I have participated in the Fetching Ball a few years back. I will say it was probably one of the highlights of my year. I was never around so many dog-loving people in my life and probably never have been since. And due to COVID, we don't get to participate this year because it is virtual. Is that correct?
It is going to be a virtual event, and I have been to a few fetching balls as staff, and the energy is just amazing. We have puppy raisers, donors, clients, just it's everyone in the same room connecting and having a good time.
It is a very good time. It's a wonderful time to see and learn, and I loved the annual update on where you're at and the pictures and just knowing the energy in the room. It is really like a hyped up golden retriever. I mean, it really is. Everybody's just happy to see each other. And that the fetching ball is like the perfect name for such a wonderful event in the Twin Cities. So if people wanted to donate and be part of the fetching ball virtually this year, the good thing is they can do it from anywhere in the world. Do you have information that we can post or on our website about how they can go about connecting with that and learning more about Can-Do Canines?
Yes, the fetching ball is still going to be all-inclusive, even virtually. We'll have people able to join. This year, it is a free presentation. Our team has been working really hard to make it feel just as special. So we'll have auction items that people can view starting February 18th. Some are actually made by clients and just gorgeous work that have been donated. We have golf outings, a trip to Florida, some dog sledding excursions. So there are items and experiences that people can bid on and enjoy at a safe time.
That sounds awesome.
If they want to take that next step and have the VIP experience, they can join our entertainment, who is Derek Hughes. For them and 9 of their friends can purchase the VIP experience for $1,000, and it's an hour with Derek to learn maybe some secrets, but I can't really tell.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. Wow.
So during the presentation, he will give a magic show. We'll get to see some videos. If people want to see an inside look at our prison program and learn more about the organization, it's a nice introduction. It's a fun time to see. So this is actually accessible to everyone since it's virtual. You don't need a ticket. You just need a way to view this on a smart device. And if you just want to sit back and enjoy to watch, that's fine. But we would love for people to bid on auction items and get the VIP experience and get more involved.
Definitely. Like I said, this is one of my go-to events and charities. And again, I'm a crazy dog person. My children are crazy dog people. So we just can't say enough about it. And Sarah, I appreciate you coming on to our podcast today and talking about how service animals could be beneficial to our group. And I will make sure all of the information about Can-Do Canines and the fetching ball is up on our website. And I'm sure there's a link there. If people had any questions, they could get back to you or someone at Can-Do Canines.
Yes. So we are at candocanines.org/fetching ball. We'll get you all the information to participate. We'll even send you reminders because we know that life is busy. If they want to find more ways to learn about Can-Do Canines, again, that candocanines.org has all the information they could ever want. If they want to go to the website and look at events, we have virtual presentations as kind of a little tour of our facility and our mission statement. So that's the tales to tell. And then we also...
Tales to tell. Oh my gosh.
Tales to tell. And we have the opportunity to share our virtual graduations. So if people want to see what exactly our dogs do, they can see our past two virtual graduations listed on the events page, as well as our upcoming graduation, which is March 13th. We live stream it on YouTube at 1 p.m. People can chat and talk and visit on the feed, and then it will stay on YouTube for everyone to see and share.
Well, that's amazing. How many graduates are you anticipating in March?
I believe the March number is going to be 16. Most of our graduations are between 13, and last year we actually graduated 23 teams. So it'll be about 16 this graduation.
Oh my gosh, what a fabulous way to start out your spring. Just
It is.
graduate and get your team home and going, and what a great time to like just jump into life, wouldn't you say? Especially because we're all going to be COVID-free by then, right?
That's right. So we can just celebrate in our little pods in our homes and still get to cheer on a lot of people and a lot of dogs doing some amazing things.
Oh, that is amazing. Oh, I'm so glad that we touched base. I'm sure I am going to be a frequent stalker again on the website, and maybe we'll have you back on to talk about some more things because I know that our community is going to have a lot of questions.
Absolutely, and I would love to answer all of them. There are so many events that are coming up that people can view from around the world at this point since it's virtual.
Yeah.
For those in Minnesota and Wisconsin, we absolutely encourage everyone to look into finding out what our dogs do if they're interested in applying for one. We hope to have more volunteer opportunities in the future as things reopen. And of course, if they're interested in donating, whether it be time, resources, or money, we are absolutely able to pay that forward and get more teams going this year.
That sounds great. I love that there's opportunities for everyone to get involved virtually or just, like you said, making donations of all kinds. You're right. Sometimes we need time, sometimes we need money. But thanks for bringing that up. Well, Sarah, thanks again for spending time with us today. I'm excited to have you guys have a great fetching ball, and hopefully, we'll touch base soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much again, Stephanie. I really appreciate the time and connections.
Great. Thank you, Sarah.
Okay, take care.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Energy in Action. I hope you enjoyed learning about Can-Do Canines as much as I did. If you want to learn more about them, please go to their website at candocanines.org and check out everything for the fetching ball. This is a great opportunity to support a service animal and all of the work that they're doing to help make lives better for those with mobility issues. Thanks again, and see you next week.